discussions keep getting into allocations of resources, so I thought as long as that's where the group's going, maybe the leader should follow. And see where we get today. And part of why I had left...
No interest now. No interest now.
I had decided when I was thinking about this week to start from a very personal perspective, our own death, you know, move it out a little bit about more control over our death, and then I was going to go through some discussions today on how you make decisions for others and bring some pediatric stuff in, and then get into the global stuff, but this one keeps coming in, so I thought let's go ahead and tackle it. Part of why I had been somewhat reluctant about bringing it in has to do with its complexity, and it's, you know, it's like there's no answers, so how can you begin to sort out where do you start? But I also decided, I watched Larry Rasmussen in his first session, and I decided I can use a Larry Rasmussen teaching model, and you know, it'll be your thing. I want to start with just a few things that I think help frame some of how we got to where we are in healthcare. And one of it is this asymmetry of how we do healthcare. When you think about what kind of structure we have here, it's a commodity that we all, almost all of us, use, but we don't pay for. And in fact, the one who decides what gets ordered is not the user either. Almost always when you go into healthcare, the physician or caregiver decides what you need, what he's going to order for you, or she's going to order for you. And that person doesn't pay for it. They, you know, they've had carte blanche. I wanted an MRI, a CAT scan, all this lab work. I want these drugs. Ta-da-da-da. The one who receives the health care usually doesn't order or pay. So what's the big deal? You know, I can go in and I can say, well, I want to see if whatever's going on, will you help me do it? And so the doc says, sure. And then the one who pays doesn't order or receive the services. It's an incredible system that we somehow created. It makes practically nobody very accountable. And it has led to a lot of probably overconsumption of healthcare because there is so much available, that this model combined with our incredible ability to develop newer and newer technologies, newer and better, sometimes better technologies. We just start.
Plus the legal system where you sue somebody if something goes wrong, so they take everything.
This is true. So that's one perspective I wanted to share with you before you guys take over. Not any crew based. And thanks to the technical crew.
Here we are.
I didn't order or pay for it either.
Just made the decision.
Well, there's no other product that we consume that works quite like this, is there? It's unique.
Well, when I went to get a Tagamet prescription, and the druggist said, you will be shocked at what this costs, $113.
A what prescription?
A Tagamet.
Oh, I don't know what that is.
I said, maybe you should live with the gastritis.
Yeah.
Really?
I had a sinus infection a couple weeks ago, and I went to my doctor. I just couldn't afford to be sick. She wrote a prescription. I walked across the street to the pharmacy, and the pharmacist said to me, well, I could fill it the way the doctor's written it, or I could call her and get the generic. If I fill it the way the doctor's written it, it's going to be $60. If I fill it the generic, it'll be $19. I said, why don't you call the doctor?
Mind you.
And she did. And the antibiotic worked, I think. Now, can you guys see this?
It's not quite all on the board.
Well, sure. Where's my other ticket?
Oh, I see.
All I want is that graded on the board.
This is
a grid that takes quality of life.
Sure.
And grids it across the cost of healthcare. And there's a point at which, now I'm trusting other people's stuff, this is other people's work, you realize, that there's a point at which as you increase in healthcare costs, there's a point at which you continue to improve quality of life for a population. Now we're talking general populations, not necessarily individual people. then there's a point where you can keep putting in more and more healthcare dollars, and you are not improving the quality of life. Our culture does this kind of thing. Yeah. We're way up here into lots of costs and not necessarily being impacting quality of life anymore. You'll notice two other important words on here. When you are in this domain where you've got quality of healthcare still not at its peak, what we're really doing with steps of the population is rationing. Mm-hmm. And when you're over here doing a lot of dollars into health care without improving the results, you're into rationalizing what you're doing. Mm-hmm. It's because of the litigious society in which we live. It's because, well, what's a life worth anyway? You know, if we can, there's no price you can put on this life. It's just keep going and going with this kind of thing. Most of the rest of the industrialized world will stop here and not go here. And that's reflected in this table. This is a study that compared several of the industrialized nations on life expectancy. Okay. Life expectancy, infant mortality, health spending, and numbers of physicians. And the one that's the most dramatic to me has to do with infant mortality. The rate per 1,000 births for us is 9.7, and this was in 89. I bet it's even higher. Would you say, Nyla, that what's the latest statistic on infant mortality? What kind of a measure of our health care is that one? We actually, I think, are one resource says we're 22nd in the world. You're not just comparing us with industrialized nations.
Why is that? Why can't we do better with?
We're going to get into some of that, but let me tell you from a real quickie. In our society, remember that other little grid here that I had?
Yeah.
You look over here, the people who are not getting what they need in healthcare are to a great extent women and children. Mm-hmm. And one of the most high-risk groups are young pregnant women who have no access to healthcare because a whole bunch of factors, including that, I mean, like one young woman I just heard about was a runaway from her home. Her parents have health insurance. They kicked her out. They're not willing to consider her part of coverage. She's too young to go on Medicaid. She's pregnant. She has no coverage. Then you get into which caregivers will not take Medicaid patients. It's very hard to find physicians that will take OBGYNs that will take Medicaid patients. These women live in poverty. Many of them live with lots of other high-risk activities going on, drug use, alcohol use.
Poor nutrition.
Lack of education about how to do this. And then even if you got through some of those barriers and you found a caregiver for them, then they don't have the transportation to get there. They end up delivering early with a low weight birth weight baby. Some of those die, and some of them, as we talked, I think it was yesterday, some of them consume huge dollars in health care for 6 weeks and then die. Some of them consume huge dollars in health care for 3 to 6 months and then go home. In a chronic state, on a ventilator sometimes, or special feeding.
So what is it that other countries do that we don't do, that they don't have those same statistics?
Better prenatal care.
But
you know, it starts, I think it's going to change so much. Will you put your back on with the...
This one?
That one. Because I think that nutrition for children, childhood nutrition is really the key, because malnourished women cannot have healthy babies. And if you've been malnourished as you grow all your life through puberty, you cannot have a good healthy baby.
But what are you talking about malnourished? Are you talking like McDonald's hamburgers, or are you talking
I'm talking like chemicals. Like chemicals.
chemicals, like in Donald Hamburg, and all of the food additives and everything else we have.
No, it's not just I eat.
Yeah, right, but...
You might not be...
I think this is, the statistic you see here is the infant mortality average in this country. I mean, in Washington, D.C., our nation's capital, the infant mortality rate is 21 or something.
It's worse than most third world countries.
Yeah,
most third world countries have done a better job of getting...
Inner city areas and children that... The
mortality rate for non-white infants is twice as high as those for white.
So what is it that other countries are getting that we're not doing? Why does France have a lower infant mortality rate than we do? Why are they better nourished as adolescent young women being getting pregnant?
There's Mako up also. I don't know what they do. I know that they have childhood nutrition programs early on.
Real commitments are pretty little. I read an article about what they did in France, and somebody that was high risk was just watched carefully, so they didn't end up with a 26-week gestation.
We also have a national health care system.
Mm-hmm. I was even going to say earlier than that, I think their attitudes about sex, about sex education, about access to abortions, I think it starts in preventing a lot of these babies that are just discarded that we might have in our society.
Well, we're into the Larry Rasmussen mode now. What is the problem?
Yeah, what is the problem?
What's your perspective on what contributes to, I gave you some of the global kinds of thinking, but what else is there?
I think it's caring. If you were to put something on the ballot to provide money for these things, I think the majority of the people would not vote for it because they don't want to spend the money on something that's not going to benefit them.
But you know that the reality is we pay for it.
We're paying more for it.
You pay more for taking a little kid and keeping it alive for 6 months than you do for the prenatal care that have it be delivered like that.
Prenatal care for this many people for the cost of that one under the present system.
What about just raising the cost of acute care so people would try harder to avoid it? And
how can you raise the cost of acute care?
It's all hurting right now.
If we could get some of the costs, I'm responding to her. We don't see the problem when somebody says the bill. When we see the problem, that's the time to give them the bill, regardless of who pays for it. So give them the big bill and let everybody pay for it, and then put the money over here.
Otherwise, hospital bills would say so much going for this category of people that your insurance is supported, and so much for this other category.
No, you don't get hospice till the hospital gets too expensive.
You don't get what?
You don't get hospice till the hospital gets too expensive.
True. Do it like some employers have done to make the point of taxes. I think that's a little bit what you were saying. Pay the guy his $100 for the day, and then take back 32 of those dollars and say, whoops. You can't have that because that's Social Security, that's state tax, that federal tax. And he realizes the impact. Put it in the bill.
But if I'm not employed, I don't care.
The people that are getting that acute care for the small babies, a lot of them are the ones that wouldn't be paying the bill. Raising the bill wouldn't make any difference to them, would it? Raising the cost?
But the problem is right now is that many people don't realize how much they're subsidizing other people. Mm-hmm. And the opposition to, for example, Clinton's program, whether it's good or bad or whatever it's going to be. For example, it's supposed to try to address prenatal care and immunization, a number of things which are relatively inexpensive and have a very large payoff. People argue against it, say it's going to cost too much money. And so the educational job of setting is already costing a lot of money, but it's a hidden tax. That's the problem that we exchanging bills some way so that people can literally see how much of their insurance money is going to support other people. Of course, they might do that and say, well, we won't pay it, it's supporting other people. But somehow there's an educational task that's necessary here, which is... Well,
where does prevention begin and how much does it cost? Is it really expensive when you start preventing early?
So now I take it back even further, because it's, when we talk about allocation of healthcare dollars, this is really allocation of illness care dollars.
Yes, that's right. That's wonderful.
And we are in illness care here, and if you really wanted to improve the health of our society, it wouldn't be looking at illness care. It would be looking at good education for children, clean neighborhoods, not polluted air, families where the parents could be gainfully and with pride employed. So, I mean, it goes way back. What?
What would it take to switch us from illness care to health care?
About the same thing it would take to get us to education.
To get what?
Get an educational system that was educational.
Yeah, right.
Come on. I don't think it's going to happen. I think we have enough problems figuring out what to do with the illness care. So I think the illness care problems are almost insurmountable. I think that if you start getting into also trying to do the health care problems in the same package, you are
in trouble.
I'm not sure you can separate anything in the world. I sound like the person who only wants to think divisions and things, but I do think that we've got so much to deal with the illness care, that if we sort of say, oh, well, it's really bigger than that, and we have to do all this other stuff, that we're never going to look at the illness care problem, and there's a lot that needs to be done to it.
But if we backed up, though, Linda, and we took care of basic health, wouldn't it take care of...
Well, I mean, lots of us, you know, we did this morning, we're all going to die. Okay. At some point, a whole lot of that illness care system is going to be with us. You may be able to put it off so you don't have your heart attack at 45. But it doesn't mean you're not going to have it. At some point. I mean, it seems to me that at some point...
You're going to die a natural death than to die an emergency death.
But I still think that I fundamentally don't believe that we're going to eliminate the illness care system by prevention. I mean, I think it is one of the most egotistical parts of our society right now that's going on, that we believe that we can just practically put off death, that's somehow one of the problems I have with some of the health, the healthcare, the health wellness stuff right now, is that it's a sort of an illusion of control of life. And certainly you want your quality of life better, and I'm not opposing all of those things. There's nothing in what I'm saying that's opposing. I'm just going to say the illness care problem is still going to be there. You can't eliminate the illness care problem.
I don't think there is a solution, you know, one grand solution that solves the problem. But there might be some solutions. One that strikes me from your chart, changing the moral, the ethical choices that we believe in, and eliminating that long care, expensive care system. But that's an educational process and has nothing to do with healthcare itself.
Well, the other thing that I'm picking up, both from the way Gail's chart went and from Mark's comment about France having a national healthcare system, maybe this system that we have where the people who pay are not the people who are receiving the services, what about a national healthcare system? Would that be a way to start to do that?
It would still contain the same, the ones make the choice that don't pay the bill. Because the doctor still has to.
Who's here from Oregon? Well, that's surprising. I wanted to know what people from Oregon thought of this new system of prioritizing healthcare and investing, doing a sort of cost-benefit analysis and investing a higher percentage of the funds in things that have a larger payoff for a greater number of people. But it does mean that individuals, for example, need a liver transplant or something.
They come to us.
They do? They come to...
They come to Washington.
Yeah.
So, and then they get free, did they end up in your free care costs?
Or Medicaid. And it doesn't take long to establish residency in Washington, you can recover that.
One end or the other, other people who have.
Somebody's going to pay for it, as long as, see, what we get, one of the big dilemmas in healthcare is that we're making decisions at a micro level. We'll make a decision for you, or you, and decide what you want, and almost always, people and their significant others will say this question, well, of course the life's worth that, of course that. But we don't want to get into these macro decisions that say, as in England, if you're a certain age and you end up with kidney problems, you're not offered dialysis. I mean, it's just not an option for you within that system. If you're wealthy,
you go somewhere else.
You can go somewhere else and get it. But they've made some conscious decisions, which is what Oregon is trying to do.
Look,
as
this,
well.
This is a conscious decision, though, that we've made in this country about abortion. We're saying if you can't afford to pay for it, you can't have it. I mean, that's one of the decisions we've said. You're not your age, but your income, you can't have it. You don't have insurance.
Well, in fact, we do our rationing in a de facto way.
Yeah.
Yes, that's right.
Them that has gets.
Those
people who have jobs and have health care insurance gets who go to their doctor and get hospitalized if they need it. And these families who don't have insurance or are underinsured, that's a form of rationing. Yeah.
It certainly
but
is.
We have to change our heads about the turnaround time. I mean, now there's an article, I think it's in the Seattle paper from yesterday or the day before, about the new study that they released early about diabetes, and they found out that the person that was using the insulin pump and checking themselves, their blood sugars 4 or 5 times a day, had significantly, I mean, it was almost 80% fewer complications. And therefore, that cut down the amount of healthcare dollars, illness care dollars that would later be spent, but it was expensive. I mean, these people are monitored closely, and it's very expensive initially. And the insulin costs.
And most insurance, at least in Washington, won't pay for insulin or insulin pump.
Yeah. I mean, and that's just.
I have a diabetic brother. It's remarkable.
Isn't that amazing?
I mean, and that.
They will pay for all the complications that come.
Yeah, that's right. He's blind, and he's blind, and his liver fails.
Yeah. That counts.
But I mean, the insulin could prevent all this. We wouldn't take these dollars.
3M company has never paid for anything that was preventative. Never.
I don't think insurance companies do, and mine doesn't.
And that seems to me as one of the strategies is incentives for healthier eating, incentives for preventive healthcare and so forth. If you make healthy food cheaper than unhealthy food.
We did that at Holden, they charge less for their ice cream here than other places.
Healthy.
Not
even a non-fat yogurt on the menu.
It
was the first day.
Excuse me, David, go ahead.
But Gail said it's a matter of distribution of wealth within society is one matter, because if people can afford to eat well, if they can afford to get education where they understand these things better, if they don't have to pay or if they can afford to get themselves to the doctor who's at a distance, we'll make great strides in some of these areas.
I don't quite agree with all of your statement, and maybe the thing you can do right. When I go to the grocery store and I buy a bag of healthy food, you know, meats, vegetables, fruits, compared to a bag of junk food, the junk food is much more expensive. Now I'm thinking of the cookies and the processed foods and the processed foods.
Yeah, it's true. But the way I'm thinking of it is in subsidized meals, for instance. You know, if we can subsidize and make free or inexpensive school lunches or other places so that people can get food at
the
local.
Country, we used to do that, and we did it in Seattle area before food banks came in.
We're in a while back, we had something pressing. Do you still have others?
Well, I'm. This is the next. This is the response. This is what I'm thinking about when you, because I intrinsically I agree that we cannot avoid the problem of acute care, okay. But I just, well, let me be more personal. I have had a very intimate conversation with a nurse that I know reasonably well.
Oh, yes.
And when she was struggling through the career mobilist shit at Seydoux, you know, she was having to relearn and update all her theory while she was, when she had been a nurse for all her life. Okay, now, but you know, for a long time. And we went through a long discussion in which she finally made it clear to me what the difference is between healthcare and the concept on which the nursing caring system is built, and pathology, which is the concept on which medicine is built. So I want to say, well, let's reframe, even if we reframed illness care as healthcare, we would do some things differently in the hospital. If we were caring for health and not fixing bodies. And I think that certain choices would look different. And yes, we still, my hunch is that there's certain kind of prevention that could be done in kindergarten. Yeah. And wouldn't cost anything but another curriculum conference. But you see, so I think you're right. The acute care is an emergency problem, and we mustn't get sidetracked from avoiding those problems. I think that's absolutely right. But I want to reframe acute care somewhat.
I want to move a comment along, and that is, in fact, I would agree so much with, particularly Gail's comment about education and the other things in the society, but one of the things that's really hard right now is that it's quite possible that while healthcare is the most growing part of the budget, both the federal budgets and the whole gross domestic product, that even though healthcare is wonderful and worthy, that it's not the one that if we have dollars to spend, we should be spending it on. Mm-hmm. And this is, I think, particularly part of you happen to also work in healthcare or something, because that it is really the case that the educational system, the economic infrastructure of the country are all things which, in fact, in some ways, might better serve people than all the healthcare dollars. You know, but right now, we really might be better off.
Our GNP back in 89 was listed as 11.8% of our GNP going for healthcare, and I think it's closer to 13% now.
Yeah,
and as long as healthcare keeps eating it up, it's taking dollars from these basic things where we might have more impact on health. Well, let me toss out another. Go ahead, Liz.
I was just going to say, but if we cut this, who's going to be affected? I mean,
But is the proposal is not so much to cut as to try to take the monies that we currently have, use them differently, and then slow the rate of growth. Mm-hmm. I mean, we're already spending more than any other industrialized country, but at least we can spend more than everyone else at a slower rate.
Like the deficit.
Yeah, well, while some of these other things, like changing the economy, are going to take longer to kick in.
I think Minnesota's plan, when I heard about it, that they had set as a goal to slow the rate by 5% per year over X number of years' time. Now, that doesn't seem like very much, but if the alternative is that you're accelerating instead of decelerating.
And 5% of what is it, $908 trillion or something?
Yeah.
But that means in 20 years it's down to nothing. And that's a pretty significant improvement. No. Obviously, you won't get
the rate of growth.
It was just the decrease the rate of growth by 5%, not the overall.
No.
Yeah, it would be minuscule in some ways, and yet it's a significant and worthy goal.
But how many elections does that have to go through?
Yeah, it'll change with the next 4 years. I'm going to give you each one of these things now that's going to be you. And we'll see what happens when you present who you are. We won't obviously get through all these, and this is totally random. don't feel bad. Yeah. Well, Jerry, you don't get to be one.
Oh,
I think some slid
up. Oh,
who groaned the worst? Mary Jo, what
oh,
are you?
Awful. 18-year-old male in a motorcycle accident with head injury, and he wasn't wearing a helmet. Oh.
Now read the next sentence. You missed a statement.
Oh, yes, right. And you were drinking. No,
I can be a mom too.
We decide whether we want to die or,
Well, I think what we're looking at now is think about the huge amount of resources that's going to be used mm-hmm. for you.
Yes.
You were an 18-year-old. You knew you shouldn't be drinking and driving. You
nope.
knew you should have been wearing a helmet. And now you're brain damaged. And let's make your brain damage significant enough that you are not going to recover from it. You are going to always, you are going to need institutional care or some
yeah.
kind of care. Or if you're going to be at home, you have to have an attendant.
Okay.
Let's say this is
let's let her recover just in time to make her decision about whether they would withdraw their support.
I mean, think
or
about that.
Or rush her death so we can, is there somebody who needs a transplant? Get her declared brain dead fast enough.
Her intensive care days are going to be $3,000 or $4,000 a day. Her rehab days are going to be a couple $1,000s a day. If she's in long-term care, he's in long-term
yeah.
care, it's going to be $5,000 a month minimum. If he's at home with an attendant, it's going to be that. How do you feel about him out there riding his motorcycle without a helmet and drinking alcohol?
The only little bit of compassion I have is to say to myself, how would you feel if that was your son?
Right.
Otherwise, I would just say, let him go. Forget.
I don't like
him. It leaves me with no tolerance for people who say it's a free choice whether or not I wear that helmet because it's only my life.
Yeah.
The point is, it's not only your life.
Right.
It has
that's
this
right.
extraordinary significance for the larger society.
Unless we make the choice that it, in fact, is his life.
Is his choice.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He made the choice and
he made the choice.
Yeah. He made the choice when he took the drink.
So will he take his life away
from I would be horrified by that
yes.
decision.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
right. That starts to get more and more comfortable on that one. If you start to say, well, you know, if you're going to choose to drink and you have all of these outcomes, you don't, we're not going to take care of you. If you choose to smoke, then it gets a little closer to home when it says, if you eat ice cream every day,
yes.
or if you don't exercise,
yeah.
or if you're a type A personality that works 60 hours
yeah.
a week, you don't deserve
care you either.
You don't deserve the
no.
care that's going to be. I mean, it gets you know, it gets murkier and stickier.
Alcohol is often. I mean, people are driven by demons in that frequently. It's not
mm-hmm.
a. It's not a precisely choice issues frequently.
Who else had a groaner that they wanted to?
Oh.
Well, I know that I can get all the care I want.
Okay. Yeah.
I'm a 55-year-old male, CEO of a major underlying company.
Yes.
I work a 60-plus hour a week. I smoke for a number of years, and I need a second CABG, which I'm not sure there is.
Cabbage.
Whatever.
A coronary artery bypass.
The gene part I couldn't figure out, but...
Oh, you're
yeah.
a good year.
I
good
mean, you should be so lucky. You're getting all our dollars.
Yep.
Great.
Except it's not really very good for your company. If they've started to self-insure,
and they might
really run into some trouble. We decided to self-insure, and then they had 2 or 3 expensive cases, and it just took everything out
well,
of the self-insurance.
Can't we make the choice that he's made so much money all through the years that he ought to carry a larger share of his costs than the rest of us.
Maybe
do.
He should be paying for his own.
Yeah.
As long as he can afford it.
Mm-hmm. One thing that the big companies have been doing with their CEOs, in fact, has been instituting for the company things like wellness programs and physical fitness and
mm-hmm.
stop smoking programs.
Yeah.
Because it's costing them
yeah.
money. The trouble is it's only for that one institution and often, in fact, but some only for management above
yeah.
a certain level.
Yeah, right. They only put men.
Yes, right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, at the Pentagon, the only...
Although our daughter...
It was only this program for the men.
Yeah.
Our second daughter is relatively newly pregnant, and she says, Mom, when they found out I was pregnant, they gave me all these materials about how to take care of yourself during pregnancy and all this kind of stuff. I mean, this is...
Yeah.
Her company did?
Her company did. They sought her out and they said, here, here's what you need to know about.
At the little level of tinkering, one of the things that has happened is that one of the areas I do with this company's benefits planning issues. And one of the things they can do to add incentives, which some of the companies have done, is that the deductible is a percentage of your salary in your health insurance. So that if you are a secretary, then it's still, and that's a, you know, it's non-trivial in a way, because every little dollar hurts you as a secretary, because you don't have lots of dollars to spend, but at least if he's the CEO, he's
It's different anymore.
His deductible is higher.
I saw a company that had
I thought that was I mean, that's not going to solve a lot of problems, but it's giving me a sensible
Like progressive taxation?
Couple groups who are opposed to it are the craftsmen.
I saw a company plan that was based on a lower cost to employees who didn't smoke than to those who did.
Now that's rewarding.
Less cost of their health insurance if they didn't smoke than if they did.
Well, alternative, which is now being adopted in light of our recent Supreme Court decision, is companies that will hire you if you're a smoker, or if they hire you, they insist that you quit smoking.
Did that just pass?
No, well, what happened, the Supreme Court decision was allowing the case to go to suit on tobacco company responsibility. Mm-hmm. And but the corporate and the secondhand smoke business and so on. So the corporations are looking around and saying, if someone has trouble, they're going to look for the people with deep pockets, and that's going to be us. Mm-hmm. So, and so there are smoking groups now that are organized to say that you're depriving some rights and so on.
Okay.
They're firing, they're saying we will not hire you if you're a smoker, and if you're already hired by us, you have to stop smoking. Or we will. And then they're saying you can't even not smoke on the job, you can't smoke at home.
Try to enforce that.
That's going to be a while to get to there, because Boeing, being as big as it is, they have now decided that no one can smoke there. They used to be able to smoke outside. Yeah. But to get, you know, that takes a long time. That's just one thing, a long time to get through that.
Yep. But I mean, the point is that some people are doing it. There is ways of checking it. Nicotine is in your.
Well, that's a problem.
Well, that's the argument.
Have a nicotine test. Have the option of the employer.
Well, I mean, there are questions. Is this invasion of privacy? But is it an invasion of privacy to say that someone has to wear a helmet?
I think we are a society where the individual rights have taken precedence over public health.
Right.
And,
we pay for it.
Yeah, we do. Who else? Who's got another?
I've got one. This would make that I must have an awful lot of money. Couple in early 40s, unable to conceive, looking for a surrogate mother. Now that takes a lot of money. I don't know how you'd go about doing it. A friend of my daughter's, or my daughter met someone who had done this, and I think she was paid $20,000, or $10,000, I think. I'm not sure the cost. This was a couple, few years ago.
Who was the purchaser?
No, I don't know. My daughter had Grace's motorcycles, and Grace's girl's motorcycle one year because she was pregnant. And then when I asked her about the baby afterwards, when she gave the motorcycle back, she said, oh, well, she had the baby for someone else. She was a surrogate mother.
But I actually don't know how much. I put that one in there because it's kind of somewhat controversial. Mm-hmm. I don't know whether that really adds to our total health care costs.
But
the dollars will be in there.
But they may make a contract to get this baby. But if this baby isn't perfect, they're not going to take this baby. Then have a single woman probably without insurance, whose baby I mean, if this, even as big as water, something so minor as a cleft lip or palate that can be repaired, they're probably not.
Well, this is equivalent of, to the system.
Yeah, and then.
This is equivalent of someone selling their organs. I think it's totally immoral, because the risk.
Church organs accepted.
What?
Church organs accepted.
That's right. It's the equivalent of selling your liver or your kidney, because, as you women know, every pregnancy carries a considerable cost, and there are dangers involved. And but there is an expense in this beyond the woman. There's the expense of all the fertility treatments leading up to the decision to seek a surrogate mother. And many insurance programs do pay for that.
Well, it's not a very expensive. You're talking about a surrogacy that's the not implantation. That's very expensive, But on the other hand, I think it's appalling. It troubles me. In fact, if we wanted to have another ethics discussion or something, I am really troubled by it. There's something that somehow gets so intimate that this physical bearing of someone else's child is really, my mind is confused. I'm very confused about it. But I have a colleague who's been a friend for 20 years now, I guess, who has this beautiful baby.
That someone else had for.
That somebody else is, you know, they took the embryo and plugged it in somewhere. And she has no qualms about it. She's absolutely no qualms.
Because you get desperate if you can't have children. Mm-hmm. See, for a person for whom it was so difficult to have children, I felt so empathetic that I would have done that if my health had permitted. I had a hysterectomy, so it was not a choice. But I would have done it not for money, but for someone who I could empathize with that wanted a child that much.
Which is completely
different. Well, that I sort of can. Yes.
Vern, you got to get up in the circle. Nobody can jump in.
What you're doing is advocating levirate marriage, which is an old Hebrew custom. Levirate marriage. If you've got, like Ruth went and laid it to Sophet the Boaz, that since her husband was dead, he had to get a pregnant so that her husband's line wouldn't be extinct. So the family ought to take care of that. The family ought to take care of, I mean, in the Hebrew system, in the system back there, the family would take care of those things. But another thing that was flying over my head. I am cautious about what, I think there's something very, I think we're into an immoral puddle with this, but I'm immediately thinking of prostitution, and I'm concerned about a society that blames the victim. You see, I'm concerned about a society where things like that happen, and the people who are initiating it don't bear the responsibility for the problem. It's the person who gets into the middle of the maelstrom that bears the responsibility of the problem.
So you're saying you want sympathy for
the money was so important to her and her life that she was willing to do that. Of course, there's this new movie out, you know, Will You Sleep With Me for $50,000 or something.
Indecent Proposal.
Robert
Redford, who would need a million?
And
there's no question.
But you see, it's not only the prostitute, it's the drug addict, it's all these people that are caught in the middle of a maelstrom where the other persons are making the profit on, are getting the payoff and initiating the situation, and the person in the middle gets blamed.
Okay, I have a situation.
Okay, go for it.
I'm a female drug user and abuser, so I don't know what my HIV status is. Probably it's positive, but I'm a drug user and abuser. I'm pregnant with my second baby. Oh. I tested positive for drugs with my first baby, and they took that baby away, and I'm on the baby. And I know I can stop this drug stuff. And there's only a 30% chance of me having, really have, of my baby really having AIDS, so.
Only perfect.
I'm
good.
No, Nyla, has it been cocaine, so your baby's going to be born with the...
Yeah, it's going to have attention, it's going to have, it's attention deficit, or it's
all that impact of the cocaine on your baby, too.
Yeah,
I was using somebody else's...
I've been using somebody else's needles as well, I mean, they're really crack, but I've also been sniffing it, and somebody else's, I mean, the blood from my nose and the blood from somebody else's nose, so I got...
Do you know who the father of this baby is now?
No, I don't really remember. I need money.
Now, Nyla, how many of these moms have you cared for? So she could really elaborate, because she had been there.
Did you plant that one to plant with her?
What?
Did you plant that one?
No, I didn't plant it with her.
What did you say to that person?
Well, she wants to have the baby. I probably found her at the end of the pregnancy is when I got her. And she was in labor. I want, personally, I mean, at that point, for me, I want to give her the best birth experience possible. If she has a good birth experience somewhere in this, I hope that means that she will maybe try to change, try to stop the drug abuse. I mean, she probably, most people don't use, well, sometimes they do. But anyway, hopefully she won't hit her baby as much if she has a good birth experience. And maybe we can help her get into a drug abuse program, and she can get into some kind of a women with AIDS program.
And meanwhile, though, what's going to happen to that little kid?
Well, she's, maybe it will have a mother for a couple of years.
Maybe Nyla will get her into parenting classes and she'll learn how to...
I mean, into a residential AIDS program. There are only about, what, five in the country that will take women with new babies.
We have one in Seattle.
We only have like two in the world. But I mean,
I'm going to
cost you all a lot of money.
I'm going to
cost you all a lot of money.
I'm going to
believe it.
What?
Nyla, you met her earlier. You met her in a prenatal clinic over here.
Well?
This kind of woman wouldn't come to a prenatal clinic.
She probably doesn't come unless...
Mm-hmm. It could be probation, a condition of probation.
She wasn't arrested.
She wants this baby, doesn't
she?
Right.
Assuming that for some odd reason she shows up.
She couldn't talk her into having the baby put up for adoption.
And that's probably going to be HIV positive. And so it's not one of the desirable babies. Your friend wouldn't want this baby.
But that child isn't going to be only in your home for the next 18 years of its life.
Right.
You know, it's going to be in and out.
The baby would probably live 18 years, right?
Well, it might. It's probably going to be HIV, but it might not be. It's only 30% chance that it
More than will.
It may convert.
What is the life expectancy of a baby that's born HIV?
I don't know that.
If it converts, it has about a year to convert. I mean, it's...
Some of those babies,
Some babies are not HIV.
For some reason, some of the placenta blocks the transfer.
They're going to be born HIV positive, but they convert within about a year. Their own system takes over. And so they are not...
Time for that. Let's hope for it.
Their system will throw it off.
So it's not a one-to-one transmission.
And they may not be doomed. Well, they may be doomed.
The other thing is she's a drug abuser, so she probably, if I'm going to keep taking crack, crack does some, it separates a placenta. Mm-hmm. I'll probably get an abruptural placenta and this baby will be born. I mean, after one of my crack times, and this baby may be born 10 weeks early. Because I didn't want to take crack close to time the baby was born,
and your baby may be damaged not only from from the birth process being too early, but also from some kind of effect of on the drug.
Yeah.
Let's just read two more of these and not get into discussion, because I think they're kind of cases.
But that was very interesting. Thank you.
What's yours, Linda?
I'm a 22-year-old single mother of two children with no transportation to get the children to their immunization. That's a real, real one.
Real. Just read the short.
So we forgot to bring the kid when they finally did get them. My husband said, what hope is there? Forgot the kid at home for the immunization. In Boston, one of the, it's not Birmingham, well, more of the pre-Medicare, one of the, actually it was a Catholic hospital, it kind of surprised me, has closed its the maternity hospital in one of the poorest parts of Boston. And there's an incredible community outrage around it, because it isn't true that there, that overall there are enough facilities in the Boston area, but the transportation things to the other places to get this care.
How difficult would it
be? I mean, most of us don't even bother to ride buses most of the time because it's such a pain in the neck. You know, think about taking.
I mean, if you're talking immunization, you're not talking about huge facilities needed.
You said
a
mobile.
People and put a couple of nurses or doctors in a van. And
well, the drug companies scotched that one.
Well, they used to do it in school.
Why?
Sure. Underinsured young couple in a major city, unable to find OBGYN who will give prenatal care.
Underinsured.
Sure. That's tough.
Helen, what does yours
say? This is an alcoholic, 45 years old, male, needs liver transplant. And I say, bad.
How old are you?
45.
Liver transplant. Oh, not a chance.
Who's my husband?
Yeah.
How about a 78-year-old living on Social Security, unable to pay for groceries and medicines needed for diabetes?
Yeah.
But when did you get there, back there, Gail?
Well, I kind of was in this situation, but I didn't have premature twins. I had a child, and we had no insurance, and my husband was student at the University of Minnesota. This one is a 30-year-old married mother of premature twins, unable to give up her job because her husband's job doesn't have health insurance. And having premature twins, depending on their problems, their hospitalization, they could be in there for a couple months or longer. If they were in a level two nursery, you'd have the double cost. So even though she would probably have to go back to work and then try to find resources to, it would be kind of difficult on her particular, I don't know if they probably could work it out, but yeah, from the woman, it's probably quite difficult because the husband still has, or she has insurance. So she probably would have to go back to work in 6 weeks.
This one's very real to me. Mm-hmm. The one baby is home and is very severely damaged from his being a very small preemie, neuromuscular CP kind of thing, and very difficult child to manage, cries for hours at a time, a shrieking, wailing, inconsolable cry. The other baby's still hospitalized on a ventilator. And this woman cannot give up her job because she is the carrier of the health insurance. I think about this family all the time.
Who is the father in that situation? Is the father capable of doing
He works too. He's got work, but his work doesn't have health insurance with it. The excruciating fatigue that this couple lives under is, I think, unimaginable.
But could be the likelihood of that father getting a job with those circumstances.
It would be a pre-existing condition.
Yes,
yeah.
They wouldn't duck him with a hand pull.
Now, ultimately, they will outspend their million-dollar policy, too, and these children will be eligible because they have such devastating conditions for, whether it's SSI or Medicaid or one of the other programs within the state or the federal system.
It is interesting in this situation, because I was probably about 27 and I had a child when she was 7 months old, and I was working at that time, but then I went on part-time, and my employer do not, I'm a nurse, and they did not tell me that my insurance had lapsed, and they continued to take the insurance out of my paycheck, but somehow or the computer or whatever. So when I was being, somehow or other, I found out that I did not have any insurance, so then I went to the university, but my other two children I had had in a private hospital, and I had to go then to, you know, sit in with at the University of Minnesota with all these people that did not have insurance, or if your husband was a student, then you could go there, you know, just show your fee statement. And that was a different experience for me in the way you were treated, because you didn't have insurance or you were there. And also, you know, wanting a medical student, I refused to have 10 medical students observing me when I went in for my checkup, because I was very strong about that and did have a resident. But I think that if you talk about respect and value, that people oftentimes, because they're on welfare or whatever, oftentimes get treated in a different fashion than people who have insurance or...
That's a whole other discussion about it. Do we have a two-tiered system, even if you have access to health care, do you experience something different? Depending on how
and then care. Also getting you out of the hospital if you don't have insurance. You know, I lived in Minnesota, and you know, depending on what your insurance pays for, what you know, you are out if you go to the nursing home or you go wherever, because you only get the hospital only gets X number of dollars for each diagnosis. And, you know, also the Medicare patients. Now, in Minnesota, and I worked in the intensive care units and the cardiac units, everybody got the care. There were very few people that, I mean, we never turned away, and there was, I mean, these people were laying there on ventilators, and their quality of life, but I was concerned with, I mean, I think that they should have, there was less 3 months laying in an intensive care unit on a respirator and having tube feedings and all these things. There was never, they were never turned away, or we never stopped, or...
We need to stop our class because of the next group, and besides, some of you might want to get to the next one. What's your pleasure for Friday? That's the next time we get together. Do you want to take up something really tough like surrogates, all this business around? Surrogacy, or but the other thing I had planned was to present a couple of the case studies that have come to our ethics committee and ask you to strongly
suggest.
Yeah,
that would be very good.
Okay, then I will come prepared to that, and I'm going to ask you to be an ethics committee and struggle with them. Okay, thank you for today.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah.
Why don't you have the rest of them taped?
I was so
going to be here.